When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yo, and welcome to the 133rd episode of Lake of Rage Pokemon Trading Card Game Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kevin Clementi, aka Mellow underscore Magikarp. I'm joined today by a very special temporary guest host joining us fresh off of a top eight finish at the San Antonio Regional Championships. We have the former and reigning national champion for the United States, the one and only Nick Robinson. Nick, how you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, Kevin. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Thank you for being on. So Maridon's one of the decks I was thinking about playing for Portland. I've since decided I'm not touching it, but the Peony build is specifically one that I was like, this is the best way to play it. It's so good. Why is no one playing it? And so I'm super excited to get to talk about a deck that I've put a fair amount of time into, even if I'm not going to touch it anytime soon.
Fair enough.
So we got a very special episode for you all. We're going to start with some rapid strike questions, of course, because first time Nick's been on the episode or on the podcast. Then we're going to talk about the deck list, some of the inclusions, because I know I saw the Twitter thread where you posted your results. People are already asking about a lot of the things. So let's just cover it for as many people as possible. And then some of the matchups. How does this deck actually go? How did your run go? All that good stuff, right? And also,
sounds great.
I got to say, Merry Christmas to anyone who celebrates, because this episode will be coming out right around the 24th or 25th of December. So, you know, we're always supplying you with that content. And if you don't celebrate, congratulations. We are putting something out there when the rest of the people take a day off. So you'll have 60 seconds to answer as many questions as you can. Are you ready?
I am 100 and maybe like 9% ready. Somewhere between there.
Yeah, if I let you keep thinking, it's going to get a lower percentage, huh?
Yeah, true. Right. It's going to be fast, though. We got this.
Let's see. Question number one, spring or fall?
Spring.
What's your favorite breakfast food?
Favorite breakfast food? Probably like a cinnamon roll.
What's your favorite retro format to play?
Ooh, I've always been a big 2010 fan, but I guess 2017, NAIC 2017 is also a retro format. So yeah, of those two.
What's your favorite deck of all time?
Favorite deck of all time is probably Zoroark Decidueye Ninetales from Sun and Moon to the Lost Thunder format.
Would you rather go to the bottom of the ocean or go to space?
Oh, definitely space.
Who would be your starter Pokemon?
Who would be my starter Pokemon? Chimchar.
Would you rather watch a comedy or a drama?
Comedy.
Toppings on your perfect pizza?
Pepperoni, pineapple, banana peppers.
Which color sleeves do you use?
That honestly changes a lot. I've been playing with pink a lot recently.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Juniper, sycamore, oak, rowan, magnolia, turo, or the other, Sada.
When I play research, I usually play junipers.
And that is time. So you made it through 11 questions. Not bad.
Hey, not bad.
So I got to ask, favorite retro format 2017 NAIC, one that is near and dear to my heart as well. Mm-hmm. But what is your deck?
My deck, so I day two 2017 NAIC, I got top 64 with Zoroark Drampa.
Let's go.
I love that deck. I literally took Danny Altavilla's like list that he won, I think it was Mexico City Regionals, and I changed like one card because I wanted to play two teammates, and two teammates was so sick in that deck.
That's one of those cards that, like, as they talk about, like, oh, we're going to have more comeback mechanics and things like that, a card like teammates or twins, you know, kind of the same vibe. Yeah. It's like, it feels like it's got to be coming soon, right? Like,
yeah, I know, right? It's like, I mean, like, we have Raihan, which is, like, kind of a similar vibe, but, like, you know, one card versus two cards, but you get the extra energy attachment. And, you know, both definitely still very shark effect. I will say I love Raihan as a card right now.
And we'll get to the Raihan, of course. Beautiful segue, yes. Though. Pink sleeves. You're also wearing a pink hoodie for anyone who's watching on YouTube. Is that just the vibe right now, or
that's just I've never cared too much about my sleeve color that much. I used to play when I first started playing, I played with it's like BlackBerry like Ultra Pro Pro Max. Mm-hmm. And now they don't make those anymore. The closest thing they have to those are like Magenta Dragon Shields, but I'm like kind of shifting away from Dragon Shields just because the quality's been on the fritz recently.
Yeah.
Most recently, actually, at San Antonio, I played with Cortexes, and those are interesting. I played with purple Cortexes until I had to re-sleeve for Top 8, which I played black Cortexes. Very, very cheap sleeves. They're like $8 for like 100 sleeves, but they work pretty well.
Nice. That was one that Ultra Pro sent us some for, not sponsored, not affiliated. Y'all can buy whatever sleeves you want, but they sent us some to do some giveaways with, and I stupidly gave away all of the boxes instead of trying, so
it's unfortunate.
Good to know that you are a fan of them, just in case they ever come across my lap again, right?
Yeah, no, they're good. I would recommend it. They definitely, they shuffle well. They feel nice.
That's not all that matters, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta worry about durability and stuff. I'd say the durability is definitely on the lower end, but they're $8, so you get some crooked corners. It's fine.
After a top 8, are you really going to be worrying about a sleeve prices anymore?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, maybe I can branch out. Maybe I have actually tried Sentinels. I really like those too. Those are sick.
Those are also very solid. They got sent some, again, not sponsored, although if they want to sponsor me, hit me up. And I've been using the same one for the last 3 cups plus Sacramento regionals and a couple challenges, and
easy.
They're fine. There's no nicks, there's no nothing. So it's like, this is great. I love it.
Yeah. For sure. Definitely would recommend trying out Sentinels if you can get them before they sell out.
Also true. So let's go ahead and jump into that deck list a little bit. So you played Turbo Mariodon, and as turbo can get. A lot of people are like, this is the Turbo deck. And then you weren't the first one to do this, but the highest finish of it where it's just like, this is Turbo.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of the cards. I think the first thing that stands out to anyone who looks at this is there is not a single draw supporter in this deck. None of these cards, except the Squawk ability, I guess, and the Raikou and the Mew. Okay, whatever. Pokemon abilities. But none of the trainer cards draw some cards. Mm-hmm. Peony, why are you running 4 peonies and nothing else? How does this possibly function?
So the thing is that this deck is like super hyper aggressive, like turn one. Like, Peony, you search your deck for any 2 cards you want. A lot of those times, it's like at least 1 electric generator, and then usually either a second electric generator or like some sort of switching card to get your attacker into the active. Or like a Forest Seal Stone. So you're like, well, I can generator and then attach Forest Seal Stone, restart for 3, see what I need off the Forest Seal Stone. So the whole thing with this deck is that it gets attacking faster than probably any other deck. Mm-hmm. It's very close at the very least. It's a deck where I can go, okay, if I want to Iron Hands turn 1, I can Iron Hands turn 1. I tandem unit for Iron Hands, Peony for generator, and a Forest Seal Stone generator. Most like hit 2 pretty often because you play 16 lightning energy, and then I can Forest Seal Stone and then draw 3 cards with Mew. See, do I Forest Seal Stone for my double turbo energy, or do I Forest Seal Stone for a switching card? Things like that. And then even with like stadium like Beach Court, sometimes you don't even need a switching card after your Peony. It just kind of flows in a way that I really wasn't expecting. And it's honestly, it works surprisingly well.
I was watching James Cox's stream. He had played it to a top 64, like 65th place or something like that at one of the regionals. And he said he had done the math. I don't know if you've done the generator math, but it's like even with prizing a couple or having them in your hand, you were more likely to hit 2 off your generators on turn 1 than you were to hit 0 and 1 combined.
Yep. That is. We did do some generator math the night before the regional, because we're like, do we cut like. Because we were originally at just 17 lightning, like it was like 17 lightning energy and 1 double turbo energy. Mm-hmm. We're like, what if we cut a lightning? And we're like, okay, if we cut a lightning, our odds only go down by like, our odds from hitting like of whiffing completely go up by like like maybe 1%, and like the odds of like, but it's like one of those things that the math was just so minute that we were like, it's worth it to put in whatever card we had. I don't even remember exactly what card we ended up putting in for the spot, but we're like, it was worth it at the time.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I wish I had a visual or, all right, you might know math better than I do, but you know how you end up with a slope of a curve and eventually you reach the point where it's like diminishing returns like completely.
Yes.
And so it's like 16, that number where you're like, all right, anything beyond 16 does improve your odds, but it's such a small amount that it's whatever.
Okay. So it's actually the math that we did. This is my friend Tanner Drabeck, great guy. If you've ever met him, he's from Iowa, getting into the game more recently. Great guy. He was doing the math because he found like the calculator thing that does the math. Mm-hmm. And it's like you can like go down to like 15, and then like right after 15 is where it's like, okay, now you're gonna start like seeing some significant differences. But we decided like we're like, there's nothing we want one more like really that bad, at least at the time. So we're like, let's keep the 16, just keep our odds high. But yeah, 15 is the magic number based off of the math that we did.
That's good to know.
Which could, which, I mean, in theory could be wrong, but I trust Tanner, so.
I mean, what good is having friends who you're testing with if you're not going to trust them, right?
I mean, yeah, exactly.
So, amongst other things, we got the energy counts in there. There's a few other, like, weird things, and the first Pokemon choice is the 2 Mew EX. We've seen lists with 0, we've seen lists with 1. I've never personally seen a list with 2. Why, how do you have 2 Mew EX?
Well, first off, if you're playing 0 Mew EX in Peony Maridon, you're wrong. It just doesn't work. But 2 was a thought process that came from Kiernan Wagner, actually, when we were building this deck like week before the regionals. We're like, hey, what if we try doing this? 2 Mew EX was specifically so that it's less likely for your opponent to be able to go counter catcher Iona you down to 1 or 2 and then just knock out Mew EX. Mm-hmm. That way you at least have possibly a way to draw out of it if you, like, you know, you hit the PME for Nest Ball or something, or if you just have the second Mew EX in play.
Mm-hmm.
But Mew EX actually ended up being insanely useful this weekend. Like, you know, it was super good in the last Tina matchup. It was made the Rapid Urshifu matchup is almost unlosable. It was super good card, definitely one of the best inclusions in this list by far.
So I have to ask, because we're testing the Zard into your list matchup a little bit, and I was finding myself putting the double turbo on Mew a lot. Who do you think held the double turbo energy more often for you? Was it Mew or Iron Hands?
Definitely Iron Hands, but it definitely put in work on the Mew EX as well. Like, especially specifically in the Rapid Strike matchup, because sometimes you just go, okay, either Dynamotor or Raihan on the Mew EX, attach the Devil Turbo, and then just genome hacking for Rapid Flow, knock out Remoraids or something, and or, you know, do like 200 to Urshifu and then knock out the one Remoraid on the bench, things like that. Definitely double turbo was mostly on Iron Hands, but in day 2, it was definitely more on the Mew EX. I actually didn't use Ampu very much at all on day 2, which is funny.
That's wild. Like, yeah. the day 1 versus day 2 met in San Antonio is still, to me, just like, what happened? I know what happened, because like it makes some amount of sense, but like, what happened?
I know, right? It's like, you know, Zard was super popular, made its Urshifus did really well. There was a pretty fair amount of Urshifu in day 2, if I remember correctly. It was like, I want to say it was like the third or fourth most played deck in day 2, which is like honestly insane to me. Like, I knew that I heard rumors of an uptick of Rapid Strike for this event, but I'm like, nah, it's not real. And then I'm like, I mean, at least in day 2, it was real.
Another thing that you have is 1 Raikou and 1 Raichu V. This used to be 2 ofs in the slower, more traditional Maridon list. Did you ever get punished for having 1 of either of these?
There definitely were times where I got punished. So one time specifically I got punished. I remember I had to Squawk and Seize away my Forest Heal Stone because I prized both of them. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a V Pokemon that I could get off of Tandem Unit. And that was definitely annoying. You know, it was honestly one of those things, is like, most of the time it was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, prizing Raichu was like kind of annoying in some matchups, just because it's like that's a great big finisher. Prizing Raikou wasn't like that big of a deal, because it's like, yeah, you have to work a little harder to get a hit off turn one. You know, maybe you have to arm press with an Iron Hands or Photon Blast or the Maridon. Mm-hmm. But I definitely am looking into probably playing a Hisuian Heavy Ball moving forward, though.
The Raihan is a card I saw on Twitter. You said, I never lost a game where I played Raihan.
And that's true. Every game that I played Raihan, I won, because Raihan, not only, so like the thought process behind Raihan is that it is essentially a fifth supporter, mm-hmm. like that actually like a fifth consistency supporter in a way, right? Because you only play four Peony, playing the Raihan is a fifth card, but also just like being able to just getting any card out of your deck is really good. Like, it just statistically is very good. There's many times where I remember specifically in my round 9 against Isaiah Bradner, he had used his Giratina and lost impact and knocked out my Maridon. That I just used my Maridon, took two prizes on a Giratina V that went Abyss Seeking. Mm-hmm. He comes up, he actually overloads energy onto it, so he had like, you know, four energy on it, lost impact, gets rid of two. And I said, Isaiah, I need you to promise me something. He's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I need you to promise you won't be mad at me. and then I go promote Raihan energy onto Mew, Dynamotor, attach, Genome Hacking, lost impact. He's like, oh, that is not something I thought was going to happen.
Do you think Raihan keeps its value moving forward now that people have seen it in the list?
I think it's still incredible, just like getting out those plays. Like, it makes it so you can set up an Iron Hands without generating, mm-hmm. like from nothing, because you can go Dynamotor, Raihan, search your deck for a DTE, attach, and you're using Amp, and it just makes it so that you have a little bit more sustainability in the late game. Something that this deck really struggles with is if it does whiff its generators, it makes it so that it could be kind of hard to like close out a game because you can't get the energies in play. But Raihan just makes it so, you know, accelerate an extra energy in play for Raichu at the end of the game. You know, set up your Mew EX, set up your Iron Hands. It just does so much. It's definitely worth playing. I couldn't imagine not playing it after how good it was for me this weekend.
And how about the Collapse Stadium?
So the Collapse Stadium was like a little bit of like a, it was just like, it ended up being really good. And it was one of those cards that we were like, I don't think we need three Beach Court. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just as like, you know, we have Mew EX as a free retreater, like most of the time anyway, because, you know, we have two. So it's always going to be in play. And we're like, you know, sometimes your bench gets a little weird, especially if you have to like use Luminion V to search for a supporter. If you know, maybe you're like, oh, Squawk is getting in the way, like, because it's just sitting there and I used to turn one and I never want to use it again. You know, maybe, or in a few cases, there were times where I actually misplayed by not playing into this more often. There are times where it's like, oh, there's damage on this. One of my attackers goes to the bench and I collapse stadium. And there were times where I was like, I was thinking I was going to do that. And then I was dumb and played a Beach Court before I peonied. And I'm like, I was going to peony for collapse. I don't know why I did that. Luckily, I don't believe I actually ended up getting punished any of those times. But it was one of those times where it's like, I could have made it that instead of guaranteeing, like, instead of them having an out to win the game, I could have solidified my win.
Speaking of the, like, you know, that idea of like, oh, they might have a way to win this game. Did you ever like want hand disruption in this deck, or is that not something you're like, I'm going to go faster and I'm just going to go there before you can get there?
Yeah. I mean, the only time that hand disruption I think really matters for this list is against like Zard. But even then, like if they set up Pidgeot, like not really, like I'd rather just boss knock out their Pidgeot. Or if it's like, I had a bad start, which this deck doesn't actually have a bad start very often. So from my experience, at least, maybe some other people that play this would sell you differently, but it's like the whole point of this deck is to be hyper aggressive. And the whole point of the reason I played this deck was that I specifically for San Antonio was like, I want to be the deck that other people need to have a response to. So many tournaments, I've been playing decks like Gardevoir and Lhasa and like different Lhasa decks where it's like, oh, I need to try and find my response every single turn. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I have to be reactive as to what my opponent's doing. And this, you know, for San Antonio, it's just like, I just want to be the deck that I go fast and it's really annoying to deal with. And if you don't have the out, you don't have the out, you lose.
So that's actually super interesting. I love the like... that I want to be the deck that's asking the questions, right? Instead of the deck that's trying to answer them. Did you know the Lake of Rage podcast now has merch at doomed-gaming.com, which is down below in the description? We have a shirt and sticker available to you. Use code LAKE for 10% off your first order of some Lake of Rage podcast merch. And if this sells well, we're going to add some more designs in the future. Now, onto the show.
I played against Gardevoirs. I played against a Chen Pao. I played against a Palkia. I played against Lost Tina. I played against Urshifus. I played against a Mew. Mm-hmm. Like, I played against... And I played... Did I say Stahl already?
You've
I
not
played
said
against
Stahl.
A Stahl. Yeah. Oh, I played against a Stahl. And yeah, so I would say I played against pretty much everything that's, like, the meta.
So I want to start then with let's start on the negative and then we'll head into the mm-hmm. positives. So the Zard matchup, why is it actually so bad? Because you're like, oh, I'm going to amp you very much, right? It should be good. You're taking multiple prizes.
Well, the problem is that one, the biggest thing is that a lot of Zards that going into this weekend were playing Tool Jammer or like double Tool Jammer, which... Two of the lists, I played against Grant, Manly, and Azul in my run, and they weren't playing it, but they were playing two vacuum. But like one of the biggest things that this deck can do to circumvent the how quickly they do enough to one-shot you is to play Bravery Charm. And obviously, that doesn't work if they just vacuum it away. And it's one of those things that they can even, like, even if they whiff it for a turn, they can still vacuum it later and then take two prizes on something else if they just, like, boss around what I like if I throw up like a single prizer. It's also just like, you know, like I said, this is the type of deck that you need. It's like, I'm gonna go fast and you need to find the answer. Well, Zard's answer is to rare candy into Charizard, which is like not that hard to do, especially once you set up a Pidgeot and you get a one free card a turn. It's like, okay, I need to have one of the cards I need in my hand, and that's pretty much it. And also, like, once they have that Charizard EX in play, it's really hard to knock out. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, you know, you can go for a big Raikou, but with Raikou, you still need six energy in play to do that. Raichu. With Raichu, you need six energy in play to get that knockout. And then once you do that, you don't really have a response after that. And then they get their second rare candy Charizard, and you're like, well, this sucks. but then, like, so yeah, it's just they have such an easy time responding. And there are definitely things that you can do. There are ways that you can play it, you know, but it's just, since this deck wants to be the aggressor, the like ways that you preserve your attackers are like not taking prizes. And then they like, okay, I can Photon Blaster for 220 and then they can only hit me for 180. Like, it's like, okay, that's great. And then they go quick search for boss and then they just boss and take two prizes anyway. And it's like, okay, well, I like, you just can't win that prize race very well without things going very much your way and them not getting very lucky.
That makes sense. So is this a deck then where you're kind of like, if you play this, you should kind of accept that Zard's going to be a rough one, but in your opinion, is that worth it?
So I will say that I probably got a little bit lucky on the matchup roulette because, like, I mean, Zard was like almost a quarter of the meta and I only played against it twice in Swiss in 15 rounds. So like, I will say I got pretty lucky in that regard. I think moving forward, realistically, you probably need to play some sort of answer to Zard. The best answer to Zard that I've thought of, and funny enough, something Azul actually mentioned to me in our top eight match was playing Tapu Koko EX, just because since Zards are playing really low switch counts, like, I mean, Grant and Azul's list played zero. Mm-hmm. So it's like you can use that Tap Coco EX, respond to a knockout with 120 and a paralysis. They do nothing for a turn. You go into a Photon Blaster, take D20, and makes it so that you can kind of initiate a prize trade in a way. You know, but ultimately you still want to try and find like boss's orders for Pidgeot. So maybe playing another boss is good. I've also thought about playing like a counter catcher, knowing that in the Zard matchup, a lot of times they actually go up on prizes. So you could go Peony for counter catcher, bring up Pidgeot. So I'm definitely looking into those two options for Portland.
Oh, nice. You're going to be in Portland?
I will be in Portland.
Cool. Good luck unless we play against each other.
Well, I mean, it's still good luck. You know, it's more fun when you win a good game, right?
That's true. I just want to be a little luckier.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to be a little luckier, but it's fun when you play a good game.
That is true. It's incredibly unfortunate when it's like, oh, I donked you twice. Like, this was... Now I just have to go stand around for 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's another thing is that with this deck, you will have a good amount of time in between rounds.
So another one of the meta matchups, and one that I think is going to be a little more relevant into Portland regionals, is...
Oh, that's a dog.
La Sontina. How does a La Sontina matchup play out? Because in my head, I don't know, you can tell me why I'm wrong. They're one-shotting you. They're pathing and Roxanne-ing you. They're able to counter-catcher the Flaffy and do some Sableye shenanigans. Like, they have so many options that in theory, it shouldn't be great for you. So how does that matchup actually go?
So from my experience, the matchup is you start off as the aggressor, and you're essentially taking two prize knockouts every turn. And whether there's a few ways that happens, it's either you Photon Blaster their Tina V that they Abyss Seeking with, which usually they're going to have to Abyss Seeking with so that way that they can respond with a Lost Impact. Or you amp you very much like a Comb Fee or something active, take two prizes. Then they bring up, they cut up their, you know, their Tina comes up, they go Lost Impact Knockout. And then oftentimes you can respond with a Genome Hacking with Mew EX for Lost Impact for Knockout. And then it's really up to if they can come up with a response after that. It's a very fast-paced matchup. And it's one of those things that Tina, it's a deck that they need to find a lot more to get a knockout from my experience. They have to hit the Colorless Experiment each turn. They have to have VIP pass like in hand. In setup, they have to get off their flower selectings. They generally have to work a little bit harder than you to get your knockouts. I will say it's still one of the closer matchups. I think it's favored for Maraidon just because of how fast you can be, especially my list with the Raihan and double Mew to be able to have Genome Hacking. You still play, to talk about your, Path Roxanne, you do still play, three stadiums and a vacuum. So you still have outs, obviously Path Roxanne still sticks sometimes. That's a thing that exists. But from my experience, it's like I'm usually the one that's able to get off my attacks more consistently. And then sometimes they're stuck around being like, oh, well, I'm going to have to hold off a turn because I didn't get what I needed. Hi, Roxy. How are you? Roxy really wanted to say hi to the viewers.
So one of the other meta matchups that it's still going to be around is the Maraidon Mirror. Do you think this is the version that's just like better in the mirror, or did you learn anything, or is it really just like, I sure hope I go second?
So funny, I guess the one matchup I didn't play was the Maraidon Mirror. I played matchups like similar to it, like in terms of like, I guess like Chen Pao and Palkia are like a little different just because they have the, they're not necessarily doing anything turn one. I guess technically Palkia has, Suicune, but you can play around that. So it's a lot of, in the Maraidon Mirror, it is going to be go second, obviously. Get off your turn one attack. I think this deck is more likely to get off the turn one attack just because you can Peony for like double generator. And Maraidon, Path Maraidon has to draw into it, which they just don't do sometimes. So that's also, and that's also the scary part, is that the other Mrydons can path you, and sometimes you're like, well, this sucks. But yeah, it's definitely a close matchup, whereas, like, you know, this build is being hyper aggressive, it's going to be more likely to take the turn one knockout. But then Path Mrydon is, well, I have Path Judge, I have Path Iono, and sometimes that just works. And, you know, if they set up, they get their double Flaffy out, then they also get to just be like, well, I have a consistent attack each turn. I don't really have to work that hard to, you know, get her done.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Another deck that you did manage to, or actually don't know if you beat it. Did you beat Stall?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I beat everything that wasn't Charizard, and then I did I tied Grant Haze in a game that we had a weird set, because, but yeah, I beat everything that wasn't Charizard.
All right, so let's talk about Stall. Then,
yeah,
so have you? I've also been asking this of people because I came to the realization this is true of myself, and it seems to be for most people. Have you ever been to a West Coast regional when Stall or Control was meta, so like a viable deck like Gigas Hoopa or whatever, and not hit a Stall or Control deck?
I haven't been to that many West Coast regionals, so like, okay. I went to the two Salt Lake cities that, you know, post COVID. I went to Sacramento, and then I went to like Arizona for the 2016-2017 season. I went to that Arizona. I was there. My hands were up.
I've heard nothing but the worst things. Is that literally like the worst regional to ever occur? One of the worst regionals.
For context, viewers, you need to know about this. For context, I use the Arizona 2016 die, like, as my flipping die, as a reminder that if I can get through that regional, I can get through anything.
One day we have to have, and or I have to have, people who have been to like the worst regionals of all time to just have a discussion.
You can make a whole like 2-hour podcast episode just about Arizona 2016. I swear. I could talk about it for like an hour by myself.
Can you give us a quick, let's say we're going back to high school English class thesis statement, 3-pronged thesis statement. What made it so bad?
Arizona regionals, 2016 was a disgrace to competitive Pokemon because of the inefficiency of the event, the lack of planning in regards to, specifically in regards to time management, and just, I guess general atmosphere because of the decisions of the tournament organizer. Like, I hate to talk that poorly in terms of like a tournament organizer, because like I know it's really hard to run regionals, but there were a lot of decisions from that regional that I'm glad that we've learned from.
So yeah, everyone's thinking, oh, Portland last year was so bad, and I do think that, but I have heard it's been worse before.
It's been worse. I sadly did not get to go to Portland last year. No, I wanted to, but I didn't get to.
It was bad.
Well, I want to because I love the West Coast people and I have friends in Portland. But yeah, I heard Portland last year was pretty bad. But I promise you, from people that I know that went to Portland last year and that were also to Arizona 2016.
Anyway, we're going to talk about the Stall matchup. So
yes.
Before I talked about the West Coast loving Stall, which is very much on my radar heading into Portland. I don't know if it's on yours. How does this deck? So you have 3 switching cards, 2 ropes and 1 regular switch. How do you possibly beat Stall with this deck?
So there's this cool 60 HP psychic type Pokemon, this deck called Spiritomb, that has the Fettered and Misfortune ability, which says basic Pokemon V in play, both yours and your opponents have no abilities. Which in Snorlax Stall, the primary ability and way consistency they have is from Rotom V.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't have access to draw from Rotom V, they only get to draw 1 card a turn. Their deck tends to do a lot worse and cannot control you as actively. They don't draw into all their Erica's. They don't draw into Countercatcher all the time. You just get to do more attacks. You get more value out of your smaller switching counts because of that. Also, funny enough, in this build specifically, you get to search out your switch cards. and you get to hold them in your hand. So you can go peony for rope switch, and you know, some lists like the Pidgeot builds that play like Luxray V, they can punish that. But the more popular build, and I think the build that tends to do better overall, just the straight build, they can't really punish that very well. They're just like, oh, well, you have two guaranteed switches in your hand. And now I know that your hand is only switches, so I don't have the access to Erica's for a Pokemon like a Lumineon or a Squawk or something. This sucks. Yeah, and then also Vacuum is also super useful. Being able to get surprise knockouts in my matchup specifically. I had a very fun game, very funny game one where I had four prizes left to take. I had used Arm Press onto two different Snorlaxes, one with a Bravery Charm, one with a Luxury's Cape. I use Vacuum to take off the Bravery Charm, take a prize, and then I go, boss, bring up the one with the cape, and I go, amp you very much, and I took four prizes in one turn. It was pretty cool.
That's disgusting.
It was pretty disgusting.
I mean, you know, that is, I'm sure plenty of people are like, you know, the Snorlax player deserved that.
That's the thing, is like, you know, you can talk, I can talk about how lucky I got against Snorlax, and people are like, yeah, go you. Like, they're like excited for me. I personally love control decks. My first ever regional, I actually played Sableye Garbodor and I got top four at it. So yeah. I love control, but like, I get why people get frustrated by it. I don't think people should hate on it as much, but I get it.
So Sableye Garb, just real quick, was it the training wheel edition with Puzzle of Time, or was it a different version?
It was before Puzzle of Time existed. It was a very jank build from Fort Wayne 2015. I was playing Blend Energies with Virizion EX to make it to the counter Seismitoad. It made my Seismitoad Tina matchup so good. It was crazy.
I do appreciate the one time I played Sable Garb was the 100 Butler won with Tina Chomp. And I saw,
oh, yeah,
Sable Garb wasn't a good deck, but somehow I had multiple Toads, which was very much not a good card in that format. So, you know, if you had a Toad tech, I'm impressed. That's the move.
True. True. Yeah. I was part of that Tina Chomp crew. I got 18th place at Dallas Regionals. I was one of the founding members of that. One of the, I guess like the third in line, if you consider who the creator is.
That's actually pretty sick. That's one of the, a quick aside, tell me why I'm wrong or agree with me. One of the reasons why Expanded existing as an official format was fun is it really gave a chance for those secret decks that we keep thinking are going to happen in Standard, and they never, ever, ever happen ever. Well, and Expanded it did. So help us out.
Yeah. No, I agree with you in some aspect that, yeah, Expanded definitely allows for secret decks to exist. Tina Chomp was a secret deck. Me and at the time, Team Gas and Cutter Tap, we were working together as Cutter Gas. We were working on this Tina Chomp deck. We were trying a bunch of different things. And then immediately after at Collinsville Regionals, we had the secret Mew Cram deck that was, you know, those were only possible because of how big of the card pool was in Expanded, right? But I think part of it too is how much the game has changed since that happened. You know, over COVID, a lot more people started playing. There's a lot more. The online tournament scene is way different than it was back then. You know, you can play in an online limitless tournament literally every night, and there's probably going to be 100 plus players in it. People are constantly playing Pokemon cards nowadays, which makes it so that I think it's just the main thing is that everything's been tried. Like, people are trying literally everything because people are constantly playing Pokemon, which makes it so that rogue decks are less likely to be successful because somebody's probably tried it and it was probably bad. So they put it down. Like, the closest thing we've seen to like this is like literally like this PNE Maridon list where it's like, oh, this is a bit different. Like, sometimes we get like weird stuff out of like Japan and other Asian countries, but it's just like, for the most part, the meta gets solved a lot faster. And while, you know, the meta obviously still evolves in various ways, like, you know, the meta evolved into having, you know, Tool Jammers and Charizard this weekend, Charizard being very popular. The the meta gets, like, the good decks get figured out very quick.
Yeah. I think that's a really good, way to put how things are going right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of the jammers in Zard, one of the reasons was for the Rapid Strike Urshifu matchup. As someone who was very pro jammer this past weekend in Charizard, because it stops that TM devolution, Urshifu, they are a fighting type deck. They should absolutely destroy you. And yet you did not lose to the Urshifus you played against.
Urshifus. I played against three different Urshifus in day two.
And you went 3-0 against them.
Not only that, I went 6-1 in games against them. And the only game I lost is that I actually probably would have won if I would have hit a double generator onto my lone Zapdos. but I only hit one because she only had Remoraid in the active and a Squawk ability on the bench. So if I would have been able to attack with that Zapdos, I was going to win because I did get to attack with the next turn and I took Peony as my one prize. So I was almost 6-0.
So, and the Rapid Believers will tell you this is a fine matchup for them. How did you do it? How did you win that many games outside of the bricking Remoraid?
Yeah. So the way that I won this matchup is because I played double Mew EX. And part of it is I just played into that, right? Mm-hmm. I think people get too strung up on like, oh, I need to take prizes fast. And I'm, because obviously that's what this deck's supposed to do. You're supposed to take prizes fast. I see an Inteleon V in the active and I'm like, amp you very much. from what I notice is that the games I won were the games that I use motivate to put two energies on a Mew EX.
Interesting.
And my best strategy was going turn two, discard two energy, attach a Squawk ability, motivate on a Mew EX and say, do something. Because they're saying, I'm threatening turn two rapid flow, I say, so am I. And then they're, you know, once they rapid flow, I knock out their Octillery. You know, sometimes it's literally just rapid flow, knock out the Remoraid and the Octillery. Mm-hmm. Don't even put damage. Obviously, putting damage on Urshifu is super good because I can rapid flow for 240 onto it. Mm-hmm. But just saying, you don't have a setup anymore. They're like, man, my deck really sucks now. and ultimately it does. Like it's like because they don't want to set up Inteleons, mm-hmm. because if they do that, then I go, okay, attack with any lightning type and take three prizes. So then they're stuck there and they're like, oh, I have an Urshifu in the active. I have no energy in play. I have no way to search out cards. So I can't even like do a weird, like, it's really hard to get off like a, you know, Tower of Waters retreat with a Rapid Strike energy and Gale Thrust. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just hard enough. And it's like, even if you do that, it's like, okay, you did 120 to my Mew. Okay, I'm just going to go attack with something else now. Like, maybe another Mew. Let's see.
Yeah, so I want to set up I just want to go back to what you're like using Motivate and why that's so good. And I can't believe I never thought of this. So you have 160 HP fighting resistant Pokemon in the active.
Yep.
Cannot be Gale Thrust knocked out. In fact, Gale Thrust does 120, which is like, it's okay, but it's not that good of an attack, right? To be like, all right, here you go. And then you're feeding the Mew.
Yeah. And then it's like, even if you do Gale Thrust for 120 onto it, it's like, okay, now you're giving me the Mew, you're giving me the Rapid Strike Urshifu in the active. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's 40 HP left on that Squawk. Normally that's like, oh, that's like really good for Inteleon, right? But then you're putting that Inteleon in play and then you're risking that, oh, if I have boss's orders, I get three prizes.
Yep. Yeah, that's
so the Squawk ability motivate play is so good just because it's funny. I actually, during my top eight game, my friend Tanner was watching from the crowd and my round 15 opponent, Sky, who I met, she's lovely. She was great to play against. Very fun, very fun opponent. He said he just heard her like malding over the fact. She's like, he just went into Squawk ability. He just motivate, put two energies on Mew. What am I supposed to do? I can't, he just rapid flows me back. Like, what am I supposed to do? And I'm like, you're right. What do you do? Like, if you like, the most damage you can do is put like, you know, with Inteleon and do 140 to Squawk, but then you're giving up three prizes. It's like, you know, if you play the matchup well, which in this case I did, it's just really hard to lose.
I love that. So many Rapid Strike players are going to be just in shambles trying to figure out how to beat that line now that the Maraidon players know it, right?
Well, yeah, that's the thing is, well, if they're listening to this podcast, right? Because I had people in my group that were playing this deck, and, you know, I had one, my friend Hayden, who he played the deck and he played against your Rapid Strike. He's like, played against your Rapid Strike, so I lost twice. And I'm like, oh man, yeah, that sucks. Like, cause I hadn't really thought about the matchup that much until I played it. And then I played it, and I'm like, oh, they just can't do anything if I motivate. Like, they literally just can't do anything.
Yeah. It's like all their answers are bad.
Yeah. It's like they can go, like, typically what would happen when I motivate onto Mew is that they would go rapid flow onto my Mew. If I had another Mew, they'd put it on that Mew. And I'm like, okay. And then I rapid flow them back, and they're like, oh, I can't do anything back. This is bad.
Are there any other, like, big matchups that you want to talk about that we haven't touched yet? Because there are other decks in the meta, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the biggest, I guess the other, like, big one that's, like, a little less self-explanatory, maybe, is the Gardevoir matchup. Just because
that is a deck. I forgot.
Yeah, I know, right? And I think with Charizard being better, I think Gardevoir becomes a bit better, because Gardevoir, in theory, like, has a better matchup against Charizard, but... The big thing with the Gardevoir matchup is that you, like, need to be, like, hyper aggressive. Like, literally, like, turn one amp you very much, turn two amp you very much, because in theory they're going to have to Mirage Steps. And then usually they Mirage Steps and go for knockout. And then you just kind of have to – the big thing is setting up your attackers and piecing out your deck to make sure, like, hey, I need to make sure that I can get my last two prizes. Because while you take four prize cards really quick, getting those last two prize cards can be very difficult. Just because of, you know, Iono to two, counter catcher up your Mew, stuff like that. Like, you need to make sure you're planning out your game to take those last two prize cards, because you take four prize cards so quickly and you don't actually get to thin your deck out that much because you're doing it in two turns. So that's the other biggest thing, is just making sure, like, you know, thinning your deck. Obviously, thinning is winning, right? You know, we've heard that saying forever. That's the only other matchup that's, like, can be kind of weird at times. A lot of time, if you're not using amp to take, like, if you're not, you know, taking two prizes into taking your four prizes, like, in the first two turns, you're honestly probably gonna lose. Like, you need to be going all in on the amp you very much play, and then setting up your board after the fact. Yeah. Other than that, well, it's a lot about knowing when to go first versus second. You know, the deck obviously wants to go second a lot. You know, Zard, you want to go second because their setup is usually a lot worse if they go first.
True.
Same thing with Urshifu and Inteleon. You know, Mew, you actually want to go get first against because they don't really do much on their first turn unless they're Fusion Mew. Then they can do stuff. But even then, in this build, specifically with Spiritomb, you just want Spiritomb in play as soon as possible so that they have, like, no chance to set up. Lost Tina is one that I still haven't decided on, because it's like, because Lost Tina's deck, like, they suck if they go first, right? Like, their setup is bad. They are less likely to respond to you taking two prizes if they go first. But they play Path, which is very scary. And if you get Path with the wrong hand, it's like you're just done. So I've been favoring first a little bit in that matchup, just because it's like, you know what, like, I still win the game even if they get a decent setup, like, going second. So I might as well make sure that I have the best setup possible. Other than that, like, you know, any deck like Lugia, Palkia, Chen Pao, stuff like that, you want to go first against, just because they don't, no, like, they're not doing anything on their first turn besides trying to set up. So it's like, you might as well get an extra energy attachment off. Install, you want to go second, just because they want to go second because they want to play their supporters. So might as well give yourself a chance to dunk them. Yeah, I think that pretty much covers the first versus second for almost every matchup.
That was going to be one of my big questions, because I was like, I'm going to default to second going blind. Is that what you were doing game one?
Yes, I was blind going second for sure. Oh, other Lost Box decks, you just want to go second, and you know, because you just want to amp them before they have a chance to really respond to you. So yeah, definitely just go second against like Lost Charizard, Lost, you know, any other Lost Box deck that's not Tina, because they generally don't play Path.
Another thing, so I started this podcast by saying I tested Peony Maraidon, never going to touch it, and then you have managed to try and convince me that it's a pretty good deck. So can you sell me, why should everyone not play Maraidon? Why should it not be 17% of the day one meta going into Portland?
I will say this is a deck that is a lot harder to play perfectly than people give it credit for. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been saying that, you know, the general consensus of the community is that Maraidon's a bad deck, right? Like I've been saying Maraidon's a bad deck. I, you know, people ask me, oh, what are you playing? I'm like, oh, a bad deck. You know, the consensus is that Maraidon is a bad deck. But then we see players, like good players like Jesse Parker and JW Cruel, Joe Ho, I don't remember his last name, you know, he won LAIC with it. Mm-hmm. When good players pick up the deck, it does well. And that was part of the reason why I wanted to play it. I was like, I know I'm a good player. I know I can sequence well. I know I can make good decisions. So I'm going to play this and see how it goes. Obviously, it went well for me. I think Maraidon is definitely a deck that you have to be okay with the fact that you may not have, on paper, the best matchup against something. I think that was something I struggled a lot with my testing group. So like, oh, well, in this matchup, then they just do this against Maraidon, so-and-so. But you kind of have to understand that it is a consistent deck. So sometimes you just don't have to worry about that in regards to it. But just knowing, we're talking about why not to play it. So why not to play it is the fact that it's a lot harder to play than you think it is. Mm-hmm. And you, I would not recommend just picking this up out of nowhere and playing it. You need to have a very good understanding of exactly what cards you need on your bench and exactly how to sequence your turn and what cards are prized, all that stuff. You actually need to be able to play this deck near perfectly to be successful with it. Whereas I think something like Zard, you can be pretty successful with it, even if you make some slightly suboptimal plays.
Okay, I think that's a really good summary of the Maraidon, right? Like,
yeah,
there's more to it than you'd expect, especially when you're dumping your hand for two cards and hoping for the best.
Well, yeah, any deck that you get to search your deck for exactly what you want, and generally there's going to be more skill expression, just because you're like, you know, instead of choosing between the seven cards I drew off and like drew off of research and what's there and what I have to work with, you have my entire deck at the tip of my fingertips, which is also an argument for why like Zard can be very skill expressive. You know, you see players like Azul and Grant Manley getting top eight with it, and you know, they're the two Zards in there because they're phenomenal players. Whereas like, you know, there's still plenty of Zards that made day two, but maybe those players that played Zard didn't get top eight because they didn't always make the correct decisions. Whereas like, I know players like Azul and Grant are going to make the correct decision like 95% of the time.
Yeah, that sounds right, right?
Yeah.
One more question, because this is another one that had come up when I was playing the deck and might for other people too. You Peony for double generator. You play the first one, you hit two energies, you're on top of the world. Are you ever using Mew first before that second generator?
So the way the math works is that you only want to use Mew first if you are wanting to like hit an energy. And this comes from the idea of like people saying, should you fleet foot it or should you generator first? If you want to hit the energy, like attach for turn, then fleet foot it first. But it, because the odds of hitting it versus not hitting it don't really change much after the fact. So from my experience, you want to play the generator even before, so that because you don't want to draw into the energy, because I cannot tell you how many times I whiffed a generator off of after a Peony and then restarted into three energy or restarted into two energy. Like I showed my opponents, like I was like, I'm like, yep, makes sense. like Like, it happens. And, you know, you don't want to hit your energy cards in your hand. You want them in your deck. So just generally, there's not a situation where you're going to go for... There's, like, maybe a weird scenario where you would go for double generator, but you don't have more than one target for it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the time, if you're going, you know, if you have... If you're going for two generator, it's because you have multiple targets that you want to get multiple energy out of play. Mm-hmm. So... And for some reason, if you're in a situation where it's like, I need to attack from my Rhydon and I, you know, really want to, then I get the double generator just to attack from my Rhydon. I think you double generated for Yimmu, for sure. Just so that you don't draw into the energies, because you want to draw into your supporters.
Nick, if the people want more from you, where can they get information from you or any shout outs you have?
So if you want to hear more from me, you follow me on Twitter. It's at Nick C. Robinson. You can also, if you're looking for coaching, I am a coach on Metafy. You can go to metafy.gg/@FightClone. It's like Cyclone, but with an F. It's also linked on my Twitter profile. So follow me on there. I'd greatly appreciate it. Also, some special shout outs. I really have to give shout outs to Kiernan Wagner, Tanner Drabeck, Hayden Cameron Jacobus. Stayed with them in San Antonio. They were great support this past weekend and played the deck with me. You know, me and Kiernan put a lot of work into the deck and selecting the card counts. You know, he was the one who got me on the two Mew EX, which was great. And Tanner also helped a lot with the generator math and things like that. And final shout out to the Iowa Pokemon community. It's grown so much over the past years, and it's super great for those of you that are going to the Iowa League Cup Marathon shortly after Christmas. Good luck. I'm excited to see you there. Yeah, I think that's all I got for you.
Myself, you can find me on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at @Mellow_Magikarp. Be sure to follow the pod at Lake of Rage Pod. This has been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. We'll catch you all next week.